the US, they let us steal uranium. You go to the UN, to the NPT, to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and you hear the US delegation reading their statements, and when they talk about Israel, you see paragraphs that you know from the language was written by Israelis.
So Israel has a special treatment?
Yes, we're a special case.
Yoshi Melman is known as an investigative journalist, specialized in intelligence and strategic affairs. He was described by WikiLeaks as an information mule who has exchanged tips with the Mossad. But in 2009, Melman uncovered a terrible secret about Dimona. Workers at the nuclear reactor facility were made to volunteer to drink uranium in 1998 as part of an experiment.
The workers themselves already cannot say anything. They have so many contracts saying that they cannot say. The question is their family. So usually in order for them to get compensation, the families also have to say they will not sue, they will not say, they will not speak to the media and so on. We know only when they have settlements, when the courts say settlement, that they give some money, but we don't know how much usually, and we don't know how many, and we don't know what condition. And also their doctors are only doctors that work with the commission.
I mean, if you only have a nuclear reactor that is making energy like Chernobyl or Fukushima, that's just one thing. You have lots of possibilities for accidents, but if you've got added to that, you've got uranium enrichment, you've got plutonium reprocessing, and you have actually the making of the warheads, then you have, you know, many more possibilities. Have there already been accidents? There's been some rumors and speculation that in 1966 there was a criticality accident at Dimona. We don't know what's been happening in that plant, and actually it seems that there's probably more secrecy than there was in the Soviet Union, because quite quickly after the Chernobyl accident it was actually said that there had been the accident. So I think Israel is more better to compare on the level of secrecy about a nuclear program with perhaps North Korea, because we know nothing about their program either. We do know that they have one, and at least North Korea is making claims that it has nuclear weapons, whereas Israel is pretending that it doesn't. So I'm not trying to say that there will be worse or better, but there are many more possibilities, so the risk is definitely higher.
Our next stop in search of answers about the Israeli nuclear program and its secrets is a Palestinian village. Dahriya, very close to Dimona, and a military field where Israel might be burying nuclear waste from Dimona. In Dahriya, a Palestinian doctor struggles to keep Dimona's victims alive. Cesium is not present in nature and can only be found in areas where a nuclear disaster or test takes place.
We know how cesium works on the body because of Chernobyl and Fukushima. Both of those accidents showed us a lot of that, about how cesium actually affects human health. And that there are claims that there has been a study that has found cesium in the region, and cesium is an indication that something has happened with the nuclear activity. It most likely would be, depending on the amount of it, would be from a nuclear accident, or it could be from leaking radioactive waste.
In some areas of Palestine, the presence of cesium is at the same levels as in Chernobyl or Fukushima, places where the worst nuclear accidents took place.
It's a radioactive isotope. It has a half-life of 30.2 years, and it acts like potassium or like salt. It's water-soluble, so it can spread very quickly through the body, and it tends to concentrate then in muscle tissue. And you also have muscles in certain organs, like heart and stomach and intestines, so that's where often cesium will end up. And at that point, it starts then to mutate the cells within those muscles, and you end up with cancer of the colon, cancer of the stomach, of the lungs sometimes, and it can lead to heart disruption.
There are many rumors about where they bury the waste, but my, and not just my estimations, are that all the materials are buried in the area surrounding the reactor. And the reason is that these materials are secret. They don't want people to go and take lead samples or go with Geiger.
The Geiger counter is an electronic device that measures the level of radioactivity. These devices are allowed for use everywhere in the world. It is sold everywhere, even online, but not in Israel. Despite claiming to be democratic, Israelis cannot buy a Geiger counter inside Israel.
One of the major problems that we have, again, it goes back to the secrecy problem, is that we can't even measure the amount of radiation in the area, because that's not allowed. And the Israeli law even says that if you take a Geiger counter into the area around Dimona and measure the radioactivity, you could be then sentenced to 15 years in prison. So nobody's going to do that. I know people even thought about doing it, but they didn't. It's certainly very risky to try to do any research on this at all, which is why number one problem is to get rid of the secrecy.
What is the security of Israel, and why the security of Israel is so different than the security of the people that live in Israel? And we hear rumors about buildings where the levels of cancer is unbelievable. And when we wanted to ask doctors, we also didn't get any answers. And one of funny or sad answer we got was that we cannot measure the amount of cancer, radiation-related cancer in Israel, because we had so many people coming from Chernobyl, from Kiev, and that changed the numbers. So that was one answer we got. And of course, this is not a serious answer. People in Dimona are not rich, most of them. If they were rich people, they wouldn't live next to a reactor, I guess. They wouldn't be depending on this reactor for their livelihood. A few years ago, they all got iodine pills that were very old iodine pills, and that was it. And they're not asking, and that's the problem, that they're more afraid to talk about it than the radiation.
But there are more cases around Palestine. In a small village lost in Al-Khalil Hills, there are other victims. One of them has already died. His son fears the consequences of telling his father's story and only accepts to talk if we protect his identity. This and many other cases come from the same region.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagian.
We congratulate all the brothers and sisters, believers, lovers in the Ahlul Bayt that on the occasion of the birth of the Lady Fatima al-Zahra, salamullahi alayha, and hopefully we are able through asking Allah, through asking those that He has set for us to ask for intercession, including Fatima al-Zahra, we ask Him to help us get closer to this manifestation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, this muqarrab of the closest entities or the closest of God's creation to Him. And as we do so, obviously that would mean we are getting closer and reaching the proximity of the Divine. We can only be closer to her if we become of the muqarrabin. If she is of the muqarrabin, those who are closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the only way to get closer to her is to become of the muqarrabin. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us these verses and has given us the Ahlul Bayt. All of this is to lead to that together. Isn't that what the Prophet said? إِنِّي تَارِكُمْ فِيكُمُ الثِّقْلَانِ كِتَابَ اللَّهُ وَعِتْرَةِ أَهْلَ بَيْتِ. I leave behind the book and my itra. مَا إِن تَمَسَّكْتُمْ بِهِمَا لَن تَضِلُّ أَبَدًا. If you take both of these, you grab a hold of both of them, what happens? لَن تَضِلُّ. You will never be lost. In other words, you will be on the right path. Where does the right path lead to? صراط العزيز الحميد. It's the path that leads to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is the... Allah has created Fatima al-Zahra and has created the Qur'an. He's given us both of these. The combination referring to both of them, reach Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Inna a'tainaka al-kawthar. We gave you al-kawthar. Kawthar is a term that we understand to be referring to Fatima al-Zahra salamullahi alayha, but the literal meaning of it is, they say the term they generally use is al-khayr al-kathir, or great, good. And kathir is not limited. God calls it kathir. God says this is much without limit. He doesn't put any limit on it. In other words, Fatima al-Zahra salamullahi alayha is al-khayr al-kathir without limit, without putting a limit to that. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, who is able to count small and great, He just calls this gift to the Prophet al-Kawthar. Inna a'tainaka al-Kawthar. In other words, our minds cannot fathom the greatness of this gift that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given to the Prophet. Fasalli li rabbika wanhar. Therefore, since your Lord has given you this daughter that is al-Kawthar, فَصَلِّ لِرَبِّكَ وَانْحَرْ. Pray to your Lord and move your hands up. This anhar is the practice of bringing our hands up, according to at least the tafasir. That's what it's referring to. Allama Tabatabai says this. It's bringing your hands up in takbir. Allahu Akbar. When you're doing salah, وَانْحَرْ. فَصَلِّ لِرَبِّكَ وَانْحَرْ. إِنَّ شَانِئَكَ هُوَ الْأَبْتَارُ. Those who say wrong things about you, and they say, oh, you don't have a son, you're talking about a whole religion, changing the world, you can't even change Arabia, you're going to die, you don't have a son, your lineage is cut off, your name will not continue, you'll be lost in history. God says at that time, and we can see, إِنَّ شَانِئَكَ هُوَ الْأَبْتَرُ. Who were the ones who were shani'? Who were the ones that were saying that to the Prophet? Abu Sufyan. Where is any progeny to Abu Sufyan? There is none. They discontinued. Their graves are lost, except for using it for relieving oneself. Some people have found them. I don't even know if those are their graves. Where are they? Where is Abu Sufyan? Where is... They are lost. They are abtar, and that's what exactly happened. one of the aspects of Fatima al-Zahra salamullahi alayha being al-Kawthar. The Holy Prophet was rahmatan lil alamin. One of the things that the Prophet was given in order to fulfill his goal of guiding mankind is Fatima al-Zahra salamullahi alayha. Khair al-Kathir, great khair. How? Look at this. Remembrance of Fatima al-Zahra salamullahi alayha strengthens the believer, gives them strength to move forward, to make progress. The remembrance of Fatima al-Zahra salamullahi alayha gives comfort. Crying for Fatima al-Zahra out of joy, out of love for her. There are people that love her so much, when they hear her name, when they speak of her, their heart trembles. They have tears of joy and happiness. The same way it says that people who believe in Allah, that were not Muslim, they were Christians, meaning they were Muslim in a sense. They were Christians, what they knew was Christianity. They were such great believers in Allah through whatever they had of the teachings of Christ, that when they heard the ayat of Allah in the form of the Quran says their eyes would start raining, the tears would start flowing. Those were those ayat of Allah. Fatima al-Zahra is ayatullah al-Uzma. She is the greatest, one of the greatest ayat of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. A person hears her name, speaks of her, thinks of her, reads of her, the eyes don't want to start to pour. And what happens when that believer remembering her, their tears come down their cheeks, their hearts tremble? What happens? That happens to them looking at an ayah of Allah. They get closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Wasn't that the objective of the Prophet? The Prophet wanted to guide all these people through Fatima al-Zahra salamullahi alayha. These believers are able to ascend, be guided. Al-khayr al-kathir al-kawthar, inna a'taynaka al-kawthar. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, we gave you the kawthar. So be thankful and pray. Fasalli lirabbika wanhar. And don't worry, these people who are against you and they're saying these wrong things, they will discontinue. Their progeny, their lineage, that will discontinue. We hope that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala grants us the tawfiq of knowing more of this great creation of His, Fatima al-Zahra, this Kawthar of the Prophet.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا
This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Brothers and sisters, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of The Lantern. How many times in life have you had an opportunity knock on your door, and then for whatever the reason, you took too long to answer that door, and that opportunity went away because it probably thought no one was home? How many times has that happened in your life? I know it's happened in my life often because I took too long to respond to that opportunity, whether it was because of anxiety, whether it was because I was too distracted with other things. Those things could have been important, those things could have been unimportant, whatever. But the point is, an opportunity was presented, a door was opened, and then I neglected it, and whoosh, it went away. Do you guys like fish, by the way? It might sound at first that it's got nothing to do with opportunities, but once you listen to the story we have in store, you'll change your mind. We'll be right back.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear friends, we have a nice story for this part. Thank you very much for listening to Lantern, Two Fishermen. One day the two fishermen were fishing in a nearby pond. Both of them were looking forward to have a fresh fish afterwards. They both have packed utensils, cooking accessories, ingredients, and fishing equipment. Once they arrived at the pond, they chose to sit at a distance to hunt for fishes. The first fisherman caught a big and beautiful fish within a few minutes. He was very happy. He then placed the fish in the icebox to retain its freshness. He would cook it whole fish in the noon. He caught a few more other small fishes after a while. He froze a few fishes to take it back home. After about an hour of fishing, the first fisherman offered to help the second fisherman. The second fisherman politely declined, and the second fisherman also caught a large fish. Surprisingly, he threw it back into the pond. The first man was bewildered by his act. He remained silent as he watched the second man capture many big fishes only to have them thrown back into the water. The first fisherman, annoyed by this act, retorted, "Why are you throwing the fishes back into the water? They were beautiful and big." The second fisherman replied, "I know they were big, but I don't have a big pan to cook the big fishes. so I'm looking for a smaller fish that fits my cooking pan. The first fisherman was startled by the response. He advised the second fisherman to cut the big fish into pieces to fit them into the small pan. Yeah, many of us are just like the second fisherman. We tend to overlook a handful of opportunities, chances, and even fortune that come in our way because we are too stubbornly looking for what we want. We need to learn to capture every opportunity and work it out so that it will fit into our lives perfectly. Most do not understand the wonderful opportunities life gives until they are looking back. The sentence was from Eric Handler.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Yeah, so, okay, I don't know what the deal with the fisherman was, and why exactly he didn't just cut the fish. But even if it wasn't, cutting the fish wasn't an option to him for whatever the reason, I really do believe in the saying that when there's a will, there's a way. In fact, it's not just an idiom, it's a hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam too. His Eminence says, when there's strong will, no body, not a single body is too weak. A lot of people overcome deadly diseases, fight cancer and horrific infections and viruses and illnesses that I've never even heard of until I heard of that strong-willed person. They fight it off and they power through it like an absolute boss through the strength of their willpower, through the strength of their heart. And vice versa, a lot of people have entirely able, healthy, otherwise bodies, but their mind and their heart has given up on life, on trying, on being alive, on them. And they can't even do the simplest tasks, like getting out of bed anymore. The human mind, the human brain, is a really, really complex yet scary thing. On one hand, it's totally under our control and it does whatever we teach it and train it to do. But on the other hand, when it breaks and it falls apart, it can seriously mess someone up. But the point is, when there's a will, there's a way. That fisherman really, really wanted to keep those fish for himself. He could have, you know, put it in an ice box or asked the other fisherman if he could store it for him, and he could have taken them home and froze them or taken them to the market and sold them. There's always an option, and surely enough, that option is never giving up, never tossing up our hands and saying, well, yeah, we're done, you know, it's over. Like, we're totally stuffed and there's nothing we can do about this. That is never an option. We can never say that, okay, I give up. Giving up is never an option when we are faced with trials and adversities in life, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said himself in the Quran that I never test a servant with more than they can handle. So there are a lot of misinterpretations of this verse. That it's interpreted as us being able to just back down from a battle, from a mission, from a task, the moment we feel we're not up to it, because, well, God doesn't expect it from me. He said himself, I won't burden you with what you can't handle. It means quite the opposite, actually. It means, look, if I assign this mission to you, if I've assigned this burden to you, then it means you can handle it. It means I believed in you enough to throw this at you. And I'm pretty sure you are able to hit the ball out of the court if you just focus and keep strong and don't lose momentum and keep your eyes on the prize. I'm sure you've all heard the hadith, and at least on this show, because we've talked about it so many times, where Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam says, the opportunities in life, seize them, for they are like clouds. You know, clouds, their passing is totally soundless and seamless. You don't hear, you don't notice the passing of clouds in the sky. Imagine how chaotic it would be if clouds rumbled and rattled as they moved across the sky above our heads. But they don't. They're totally quiet and graceful, slowly but surely fluttering through the blue sky and then just turning into rain. No cloud is ever the same cloud. And that is the case with the opportunities in life as well. If we lose sight of them and we tell ourselves that, yeah, it's always going to be there, before we know it, we'll raise our head and we'll see that that floof of cloud we had been watching 2 minutes ago is gone. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ala bi dhikrillahi tatma'innu
Limelight. Former U.S. President Donald Trump on Saturday, 15th of January, claimed that white people are being discriminated against and sent to the back of the line when it comes to receiving COVID vaccines and treatment. The article you're about to hear has been written by journalist Natalie Colarossi, writing for Newsweek magazine. The piece is titled, Trump claims white people at the back of the line for COVID vaccines and treatments. Former U.S. President Donald Trump on Saturday, 15th of January, claimed that white people are being discriminated against and sent to the back of the line when it comes to receiving COVID-19 vaccines and COVID treatment. Speaking during a rally in Florence, Arizona, Donald Trump alleged that coronavirus vaccines and treatments are being unfairly rationed and withheld from white Americans in some states. Trump said, "The left is now rationing life-saving therapeutics based on race, discriminating against and denigrating white people to determine who lives and who dies." Trump said during his speech, "You get it based on race. In fact, in New York State, if you're white, you have to go to the back of the line to get medical help. If you're white, you go right back to the back of the line." The former president's comments came in reference to a recent New York State policy that allows healthcare providers to consider race as a risk factor when administering limited supplies of antiviral treatments to those who are most in need. That policy states that non-white race or Hispanic Latino ethnicity should be considered a risk factor due to long-standing systemic health and social inequities that increase the risk of severe illness and death from COVID-19. The guidelines come after the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, found that Hispanics or Latino people are 2.1 times more likely to die from COVID-19 than white people, while African American people are 1.9 times more likely to succumb to the virus. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, has also found that certain ethnic and racial minority groups are less likely to receive outpatient antiviral treatment than white people. Furthermore, in nearly half of U.S. states, black and Hispanic vaccination rates are lagging behind white vaccination rates by at least 10 percentage points or even more, according to Bloomberg News Agency. Donald Trump, however, exaggerated New York's guidelines on Saturday, 15th of January, by incorrectly claiming that white people are not given proper treatment in comparison to people of color. If you're white, you don't get the vaccine, or if you're white, you don't get the therapeutics. It's unbelievable to think this, and nobody wants this. Black people don't want it. White people don't want it. Nobody wants it, Donald Trump added during his speech, prompting some of his supporters to cheer him. The Florence, Arizona rally marked Donald Trump's first big public event of 2022. Donald Trump also lavished praise on all speakers at the rally, who made a point of emphasizing his point about alleged widespread election fraud during the November 2020 presidential election. In other parts of his speech, the former president continued to push unfounded claims that the 2020 presidential election was stolen due to voter fraud, while also slamming President Joe Biden and railing against his COVID-19 mandates.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
قل أذلك خير أم جنة الخلد التي وعد المتقون كانت لهم جزاء ومصيرا.
Say, is that better? Or the garden of eternity, which is promised to the righteous. It will be for them a reward and destination.
We have reached the 15th verse of chapter Furqan. قُلْ أَذَلِكَ خَيْرٌ أَمْ جَنَّةُ الْخُلْدِ الَّتِي وُعِدَ الْمُتَّقُونَ. Say, is that better or the eternal garden, which has been promised to the pious ones? كَانَتْ لَهُمْ جَزَاءً وَمَصِيرًا. That shall be a reward and a resort for them. This verse, coupled with the next one, is here to tell us that the promise of paradise is to be fulfilled, certainly. Also, the people of the paradise, their demands are really logical and wise, and so are the demands of the Almighty Allah. It means that Allah does whatever He wills. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَفْعَلُ مَا يَشَاءُ. And He does it wisely, out of wisdom. And the believers have to have wise demands as well. And they do. For them, there will be therein whatever they desire. لَهُمْ فِيهَا مَا يَشْتَهُونَ. But their desires will not be in a way that they want the people of the hell to be freed, or they want to have the rank of the prophets, because such demands are not wise. So in this verse, the Holy Prophet ﷺ is addressed to call the people to judge. So it says, قُلْ أَذَلِكَ خَيْرٌ أَمْ جَنَّةُ الْخُلْدِ. Say, is that better or the eternal garden, الَّتِي وَعِدَ الْمُتَّقُونَ, which has been promised to the pious ones? That word ذَلِكَ might be referring to the consequence of the misbehaviors of the pagans in the next world, and the kind of punishment that awaits them. لا تدع اليوم ثبورا واحدا ودع ثبورا كثيرا. In that blazing fire, they have to wish for many destructions, because they will not be dead, they will not die, and they won't be destroyed in order to get away from the fire. That blazing fire will chastise them, and the ones who enter the hellfire are miserable forever.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ أَنْتُمُ
Insights into the Holy Quran. By Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So in this verse, the Holy Prophet is ordered to tell the people, أَذَلِكَ خَيْرٌ أَمْ جَنَّةُ الْخُلْدِ. Is that better or the eternal garden? This question and asking for judgment is for the sake about which no one has any doubt. It is not for the matter that those painful and terrible punishments can be compared with these matchless blessings and favors. But these kinds of questions are for striking sleeping consciences. These kinds of questions are used to awaken the people, so that they may be faced with a dilemma. The people will be awakened asking themselves, returning to their own minds, rethinking about the consequences of their actions. If they say that these blessings are better and superior, and certainly they must say so, they have condemned themselves for the simple fact that their deeds are against it. And if they say that those punishments are better than these blessings, they have proved that they are insane. Let us have a look at this example. This asking question of the Holy Quran is like giving warning to a truant young man who has escaped school or university, saying that those who escape from intellect and knowledge will finally go to jail. And then we ask them, which is better, going to jail or gaining the high ranks? In fact, this question is an awakening question. The question does not somehow need answering. The answer is self-evident. This means that if they are wise, if they are logical, if they're not out of their minds, they will definitely choose paradise and the rewards of the Almighty Allah in the next world. But what can they do? Their actions, their deeds are against their beliefs if they answer. It seems that this question is acting as a kind of reproach, but not in the form of the common kinds of reproach. The Almighty Allah is wise, and His requests and demands are also wise, and so are the people of Paradise and the ones who dwell therein. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. We ask the Almighty Allah to sit us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
the limelight.
A few weeks ago, Benjamin Netanyahu, former Israeli Prime Minister, brazenly said that Tel Aviv didn't have to abide by the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, as it was not a signatory to the deal. The article you're about to hear has been written by Julia M.K., a Beirut-based analyst, writer, and political commentator. The article has been taken from the website of Press TV, and it's titled, Iran Won Fair and Square. A few weeks ago, Benjamin Netanyahu, former Israeli Prime Minister, brazenly said that Tel Aviv didn't have to abide by the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, as it was not a signatory to the deal. Since 2015, Israel has taken full advantage of its leverage over the United States, the European Union, and the IAEA in attempting to sabotage Iran's nuclear energy program. Yet all attempts have failed miserably, from assassinating four Iranian scientists between 2010 and 2012, and key Iranian figures such as General Qasem Soleimani or scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, attempting to launch Stuxnet cyber attacks on critical infrastructure. All measures have backfired onto the Zionist entity, bringing about even worse repercussions for the European Union and for the United States. By America's own admission, there has been no evidence of Iran's non-compliance throughout, particularly at the time of the illegal U.S. withdrawal from the agreement. There wasn't any doubt that Iran has played by the rules throughout the entirety of the diplomatic process. The European Union and the United States expressed disappointment, not because of any lack of cooperation from Iran, despite being demonized for abiding by the terms of the U.S.'s own deal, but rather the futility of bringing Iran into a renegotiated deal. Iran's chief negotiator, Ali Bagheri Kani, made it clear on 11th of December that nothing less than the JCPOA in its complete form will be agreed upon. Iran has presented two draft documents based on a policy of guarantee and verification, a reasonable demand following the Biden administration's attempts to renegotiate following illegal 2018 sanctions placed by the Trump administration that ripped apart the deal in the first place. Yet the United States could not return with one counter-proposal or bring its own draft to the negotiating table, leaving its claims on Iran's level of compliance baseless. Rather, it is continuing to be steward of a coerced intimidation and threat approach. Israel's inability to cope with the futility of its loss flew Israeli Minister of Military Affairs Benny Gantz and Israeli President Isaac Herzog to Washington on 5th of December to push an ultimatum on Biden by December 9th. Attack Iran through cyber attacks or even a military strike on its regional allies or with more sanctions. Benny Gantz boasted to the Americans that he had ordered an attack on Iran, a move even the United States knows to be futile. A military attack would result in not only a legitimate retaliation from the Iranians and all regional resistance forces, which would easily defeat the Israeli regime, but also allow Iran to do so without losing its entitlements from the nuclear deal. Iran has the right to retaliate for the illegal murder of Fakhrizadeh and the 3rd of January 2020 assassination of top general Qasem Soleimani, an act which only resulted in heavy losses for the United States, the losses which it took to its bases in Iraq, completely sabotaging the reoccupation campaign undertaken post-2013 following the 2011 U.S. withdrawal. Cyber attacks on Iran's centrifuges only gave Tehran the chance to replace those that needed updating anyway, as well as strengthening their security. Though the Zionist entity, working through the IAEA, the European Union, and the United States, has not been held accountable for its actions diplomatically, it and its allies have suffered a bigger loss with each successive plot. The endless scheming has failed to position both Israel and its allies as being the best, or at least better, planners. As of late, it's questionable how unbreakable the bond really is between the United States and the Israeli regime, following the latest fallout from the nuclear deal. Yes, the United States House Committee passed the Stop Iran Drones Act on 12th of December, comically adding more sanctions during rounds of a negotiating process which is meant to remove illegal sanctions in the first place. The Israelis also attempted to resort again to contacting European and American intelligence to push the claim that Iran was enriching uranium at weapons-grade degree of purity. In an unusual move, the U.S. declined Israeli requests for tanker aircraft as the Zionist regime pushed to fast-track an attack on Iran. In a Friday, 10th of December interview, Donald Trump angrily said that if it weren't for his compliance in withdrawing from the JCPOA in 2018, Israel would have been destroyed by now. The latest domestic dispute in the House of Empire didn't occur primarily over Netanyahu's eager congratulations of Biden in a partisan sense, as various media sources have emphasized, but rather another indication of the increasing contradictions and mistrust between the allies, whose reputed inseparability is increasingly marred by losing their political grip and grounding domestically and on the world stage. Reports in Zionist regime media, too, have revealed anxieties of its ability to effectively control Washington amid brewing distrust. The United States has more to gain from a fair deal than no deal at all, and Tel Aviv fears that Washington would resort to opening communication lines with Iran without the Zionist regime's knowledge, with a precedent in history. Yet, not a likely outcome because of the deep entrenchment of Zionist lobbyists in Washington politics. Meanwhile, Iran, the honest party under a deal that was designed to stack all the odds against it, has emerged the victor in the Battle of Vienna talks, latest round, and ultimately the overall winner of the war. Iran is in a position and certainly has the right to make more solid demands in light of its opponent's shady ground. Any false claims that talks have been stalled are weak attempts to obscure that. In reality, more diplomatic progress and political clarity has been attained in the last two rounds of talks at Vienna than in the previous 6 years of the nuclear deals process. The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, wasn't a fair fight, but Iran clearly beat the United States at its own game.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so